CBSi in the world, I'm John Batchelor. 13th anniversary of the launch of Behind the Black. I welcome Bob Zimmerman, the author of Behind the Black. Bob and I were remembering the launch and how we did. We were in beta for 10 years before Bob launched. This is your opportunity to participate. Your donations, your subscriptions are generous. We're going to start with Starship. But before that, Bob, congratulations, 13 years. I don't know whether you've ever anticipated how many years you want to do this, but 13 seems a lot. What have you learned in 13 years, Bob, about the website?
You know, you learn how to do things fast and smart and make it, you know, more clean and pure and, you know, make things understandable to your readers. To me, I always thought that I'd be doing this for the rest of my life because I don't want to retire. I like writing, and so I'll keep writing until I can't write anymore. To me, the best thing about the website was that for years, you had to pitch stories to magazine editors, and if one out of 20 got accepted, it would still take about a year before it would see print. With the website, this is such a liberating experience. The day I see an article, a story that I think is interesting, it's published within 20 minutes. And if it's a longer essay or some research, something like a Mars, the thing I do on Mars, so it's up in an hour. And no one stops me, and I don't have to pitch it. And so, therefore, you get a lot of the readers get a lot of stuff that I think is more interesting because of that. And I get to write it, and that's the thing that's been. The support of your listeners over the years has always been spectacular, John. So I really appreciate any donations that anyone wants to give.
Yes, because they participate, Bob. All of our listeners participate in our exploration of the transformation of man space and robotic space over these 13 years. Everything now turns on the ability to boost weight into space because of reusability and manufacturing and the success of SpaceX and its brethren and sisters. So we go immediately, having stopped on the 13th anniversary, to wait for the celebration of the launch of the next Starship 25. What can you tell us, Bob, about the wait?
Yes, I have a link on Behind the Black to an update from NASAspaceflight.com. They cover this stuff pretty well. They've got, you know, live streams going all the time, and they record stuff about the work that's going on at Boca Chica to prepare for the next orbital test flight of Starship Super Heavy. And SpaceX is moving really, really fast. They've already, they're on the verge of completing the launch pad repair and upgrade. This includes putting the giant steel plate in underneath with water system to reduce the violence and heat from the 33 powerful engines on Super Heavy. That's almost completed. They've done some other upgrades. They've done some other revisions to the Super Heavy number 9. That would be the prototype that would launch. That's the first stage. And the Starship number 25, which is going to be the Starship on top, the prototype on top. So they're moving pretty close. So it looks like Elon Musk's prediction that they would be ready technically to launch in August is quite believable. I mean, maybe a week or two delay, maybe instead of early August, late August. They seem that they'll be ready. I still remain very doubtful that launch is going to happen in August, but it's got nothing to do with SpaceX. I fully expect the FAA and the Biden administration to not issue a launch license on time, but will delay it, and they'll delay it on a month-to-month basis, or however they can do it to cause them the least political harm, public relations harm, but to cause SpaceX and Elon Musk the most pain. That's what I expect. I keep hoping I'm wrong. My pessimism and cynicism here is wrong, but the track record of the Biden administration has been atrocious in these matters, and I think they will try to squelch this, yes.
To Taiwan. Taiwan needs Starlink. I recommend it. If Taiwan is listening, Starlink works. Why don't they have it yet, Bob?
They don't have it because of a local law in Taiwan. They started negotiations with Starlink, SpaceX back in 19, and after 3 years of negotiations, the negotiation broke off because Taiwan has a law that says that any operation in Taiwan has to be owned by 51% of local Taiwanese, and SpaceX won't do that. They won't provide the service in Taiwan unless they own it. And the Taiwanese would not change the law or even make a compromise. And so they don't have Starlink. And this is a big deal. This is kind of like cutting off their nose to spite their face. be by not changing this law or making an exception, because they rely, their entire internet access is dependent upon 14 cables, undersea cables. And China in February demonstrated it could cut those cables by cutting two. It actually did cut two in February, and for like 2 months, a lot of their, a large percentage of the Taiwanese population had internet, super slow, old up, dial up internet because they lost these high speed cables. So if China, which is talking about, you know, seriously being ready to invade by 27, if China decides to be aggressive here and Taiwan doesn't have internet capabilities, they're going to be harmed. But they don't have Starlink at this point, and they're not going to get any other company either because it's the same issue. No one's going to give up ownership to put their terminals in Taiwan.
It's odd, Bob. This is the home of the highest-end chip, TSMC. It's very strange that there's this resistance to clearly what is practical.
It's puzzling, too. You know, they're trying to launch their own internet low-orbit communications constellation. They hope to have their first small sat up in 26 with another one in 28, but they would need 20 to 30 of these in orbit, and they're nowhere near close to that. It's going to take at least 5 to 7 years before they get even close. And so they could have Starlink in operation within weeks if they said yes. And I think for security reasons, they should be saying yes, and they're not.
We go to North Asia. South Korea has made a discovery about that May 31st launch by Kim Jong-un. What is it, Bob?
This was expected. I expected this would be what they would find, but then again, we'll have to see. South Korean military revealed this week that the satellite, the so-called reconnaissance satellite that North Korea attempted to put into orbit on May 31st, they didn't succeed. It fell into the ocean. South Korea set up a salvage operation and immediately recovered some of the stages of the rocket, and they also recovered the satellite itself. Well, the South Korean military revealed that that satellite, quote, had no military utility as a reconnaissance satellite, close quotes. They didn't give us many details, and they said they won't disclose many details because of security issues. Before they revealed this, I had said it's probably not going to be a very sophisticated satellite, but I also didn't expect South Korea to tell us anything. Because it's security reasons. The less that they reveal, the better for them. That they reveal this doesn't really tell us anything, because for all we know, it's disinformation. It could be that it was very sophisticated. It's unlikely. North Korea doesn't have the capability of doing anything very sophisticated here. But nonetheless, this is what they say, and it probably fits the facts, John.
Back to the Americas. One beginning and one ending. Let's do the ending first, because the beginning is spectacular. Ariana 5, what's happened?
This week, it completed its final launch. The Ariana 5 rocket, which has been around since the beginning of this century, it completed more than 100 successful launches. It was a very reliable rocket for Ariana Space and the European Space Agency. It was designed to be a profit-making operation, and for a while, it had 50% of the commercial market, and it never made a profit. Never made a profit because it's a government operation, so it's not very efficient. And it was very expensive. And so Ariana 5 has now been retired. Europe was going to replace it with the Ariana 6, but that's far behind schedule. It's also going to cost too much, so it can't get many customers. Ariana Space also had its Vega family of rockets. Well, the Vega C, the one that really is the one they want to use, is presently grounded, and it will probably not launch again this year because they're having real troubles trying to figure out what went wrong on a launch failure in December. They also have a regular Vega rocket, but that's going to be retired also to be replaced by the Vega C. The Vega rocket, they have two in stock, and they're both now assigned to launches, but that means they can't, any new payloads have no rocket in Europe to launch from, John. And so that's where Europe is. They can't launch anything right now, pretty much. Those two Vega launches will go on probably before the end of this year. And at that point, unless they get the Vega C fixed, then it's a problem. Or Ariana 6 launched, which is a problem. They're now hiring SpaceX to fill the gap, John.
Let's tag, Bob, that you keep count with these launches. And this is a good moment to remind everyone that of the launches this year so far, 49 of them are by private enterprise. 49. And only China 24, 9 Russia. That's humbling, Bob.
I have to clarify, it's not 49. 50 launches this year was American private enterprise, 50. That's more than double what China alone has done. And in fact, SpaceX all by itself leads the entire world combined, excluding other American companies, in launches, 44 to 42. SpaceX alone beats the rest of the world. This is private enterprise, and unfortunately in America, a lot of our launch companies have not stepped up to the plate to compete as well as they should have. That's why SpaceX dominates.
And now to the beginning story. Students in Nova Scotia, what have they done?
They have completed the first suborbital launch using a student-built rocket from the Nova Scotia new spaceport that Maritime Launch Services is building right now. This is a public relations, to a certain extent, stunt, but at the same time, the students are real. This Nova Scotia spaceport is Maritime Launch Services, the operator. Their goal is to not only provide a launch pad, but also to provide a rocket to satellite companies. They have two different contracts with two rocket startups, so that you go to the Maritime and they provide you the launch and the rocket. That's under construction and being worked out right now. But in the meantime, students from a rocketry team from Ontario's York University put up a launch successfully, a suborbital rocket, and they're part of a Canadian student program called Launch Canada, which involves over 1,000 students across Canada from over 25 universities and colleges. In other words, Canada is really trying to train its students, engineering students, to be rocket experts. And I think they're very smart because that's a really growing business right now, John. Lots of jobs, lots to do, lots of excitement.
Yes. Remember, Bob, the graduate, the whisper in the ear of our hero, played by Dustin Hoffman, Plastics, that was 1969. Now the whisper would be a shout. Aeronautics, astronautics, that's where to go for the growth. Yep. And somebody wants a piece of those asteroids, and it might as well be you. We go now to Exploring with Bob Zimmerman, the 13th anniversary of Behind the Black. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patrick.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.